wanna die, commit suicide, dial 1-800-SINUS-LINE. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another great episode of Take Two Podcast. I am your host Brian, and we are going over The Leftovers, episode 6. This is the episode labeled Certified. I've got, as always, my co-host Tony along with me. Tony, how are you?
Hey, I'm certified to talk about The Leftovers.
Brilliant, brilliant. All right, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty here. We are at the, what have we been calling it? Departure Day, the day 7, you know, the 7-year...
7-year itch.
Yeah.
But the departure anniversary, departureversary.
Departureversary. It is now. So, like, we're here. We got 3 episodes left. This one we're going to break down for you tonight. If you've missed any of our other Leftovers episodes and you want to kind of catch up without even watching the show, we break them down in depth with spoilers. So go back and check them out. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic. You know that. You're listening to us.
Yeah, all you cheap bastards that don't pay for HBO, just listen to us instead. Yeah. It's much cheaper.
Why not? And we actually have more humor in our breakdowns than the show actually does. Roy couldn't be with us tonight. He departed.
Again.
Yeah, again. Oh, I already used that joke once, didn't I? Damn. So you get Tony and I, but we promise you that all 3 of us will be together next week and most definitely in 2 weeks for the finale of finales to find out how and everything goes down. But for tonight, Certified, we've gone pretty much week by week, character by character, them all getting their own solo show, if you will. And this turn went to Lori.
That's right. We opened up with her. We didn't really know at first what was going on. You see a woman talking to her or just talking about the departure in an office. It ends up being Lori's psychiatry office. And so obviously this was before everything that's going on right now. This was post-departure, but, you know, still about 7 years ago. And she's talking to a patient, and the patient's like, you know, you're not even listening to me. But Lori's totally spaced out. And the lady's like, tell me what you want me to do. You know, what do I do? Yeah. And she's like, I don't know. I don't really know what to tell you anymore. I think she's just kind of burned out of dealing with people and telling them what they need to do, because everybody is dealing with this departure. And she's just had enough. So then we see her get rid of her client and go pop like a huge handful of pills. I mean, it looked like it was a hard time swallowing that down even.
For real.
And you know, writing out her little suicide letter and everything, which she was very like non-committal and like didn't really plan it out. Like, let me tape it to the door and go, no, let me bring it back in. Let me lay down with it. Let me take off my shoes. Like, she was going back and forth with different things about like how she wanted it to go down. And then she, in finale, decides not to do it, gets up, goes to the bathroom, gets the old Epicac out, and throws up all the pills.
Who doesn't have a bottle of Epicac just lying around?
Yeah, why not? I do, just for emergencies, you know?
Yeah.
No, totally not. But
did you ever do the Epicac roulette back in high school or college?
No.
I think, was that college that was popular?
I don't know. It never came around my area.
Oh, boy, did you miss out. No, I never knew anyone that tried it, but we had heard that was like a game that kids were playing, I think around college, about 10 years ago or so, the old Epicac roulette. All right, anyway, back to
Leftovers. Pretty gross. Pretty gross scene. Yeah. But and one other note during the scene, great song playing in the background, the instrumental of Wherever I May Roam by Metallica. But I want to say this is Apocalyptica, their version. They do all the orchestral instruments, and it's fantastic. Yeah. Look them up on YouTube if you got a chance. They're great, and they do a few other heavy metal type songs in the instrumental versions. And they're a real fun band. I don't know if you've seen any of their stuff, Brian.
Only upon your recommendation, but after this episode, it was good. I was jamming out to it. I wanted to rewind, so I'll definitely look it up.
They've got a bunch of other stuff too, so check them out.
Oh, cool.
Chance. Okay. But anyways, back to the episode. So then after that, after she decides, you know what, I'm not going to kill myself just yet, she goes and finds an all white outfit, you know, pours over her closet. I don't know if I have that in my closet. Do you?
That's funny you said that, thinking that. I definitely don't have just all white shoes.
Yeah, like she broke out the Vans or whatever, like the Keds, rather, I guess it was.
I don't even have white socks. I don't even have a pair of just plain white socks.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not big on the white undergarments at all.
I guess you're not remnant material. Maybe I am closer to being a remnant.
You are. Well, I'm sure you have a white button down. Every guy
has
a white
button. I don't know if I have white pants. I mean, we are coming up on Memorial Day, so maybe I should get some.
Yeah, because then you're allowed to wear them again. Thank goodness.
Yeah, for a couple months.
I've been hankering to bust about. You like the male romper.
Not yet. Mine is still on pre-order. Oh. And it's the romp him. Get it right.
Excuse me. Apologies.
Yeah. But anyway, so she pours over her clothes and finds her all white outfit, takes off her ring, you know, and then she goes outside and meets up with some of the guilty remnant. We don't actually see who they were, but they were waiting outside her office. And a little bit of duality here. She says to them, "Tell me what to do," which is exactly what her client was just saying to her in the office.
Right.
So that's where we see her finally committing to the remnant. And then cue the opening of the show. The song choice for this week was 1-800-SUICIDE by the Gravediggers, which was a great old mid-90s rap group. I listened to that album quite a bit myself, and they were kind of like an offshoot of the Wu-Tang Clan. And I was pumped when I heard that song. It's just very different. Every week they're bringing us something very different, and I really appreciated it personally and was impressed with the choice.
By next week, I don't have it in front of me. This is my homework by next week, to look up who's in charge of that. Who's on their music selection. I'm sure they're working hand-in-hand with Perlotta and Lindelof, but...
Sure.
I'm going to get on that by next week, because they deserve a little credit. Because the music selection, obviously, it's been tying into every episode for a reason. They're picking those specific songs, so... Whoever's doing that, good job.
And it's been different this season, especially, because... You know, in past seasons, it's been the same song every episode, but...
Right.
You know, this year they're doing a bang-up job and really giving you a clue as to what the episode's about. So, obviously, we're dealing with, if not one, if not multiple characters dealing with suicidal thoughts or whatever the case. So, great song choice. Loved it. And then from there, we open up the episode and we kind of bounce back and forth. Like you said, it's a Lori episode, but we kind of bounce back and forth between two different time periods with her throughout the episode and two different... missions or groups of people that she's dealing with, if you will. So,
right.
We see her arrive at the Outback, if you will, with Kevin Sr. And he comments on her having a black eye. And she asks about Kevin. She's there to see Kevin. And he says, oh, he's off on a think. You know, he's riding a horse. We asked him to die again. And she sees John and Michael are already there. And she, I think this is the part where she tells Kevin Sr., where she's like, whatever's going on here, I want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, knowing Lori, I felt like it was similar to what she said to Kevin in the previous episode, where if someone's in the middle of a nervous breakdown, you don't tell them that they are. You just kind of, like, go along with it. And I think that's kind of her approach to Kevin Sr. Like, I know this dude's batshit, but I'm going to go along with it just to see if I can help out.
And she's uber friendly. Like, when she pulled up, she was like, hey, Pop, you know. And
they kind of led you to believe that they had a real good relationship when they were together, when Kevin and her were together. Yeah, so like I said, they kind of bounce back and forth between that timeline, and then we go to the other scene where we see her with Nora, and she's trying to get some pictures and a bush, and a dog's trying to, you know, bite her or whatever, and you see that she's trying to get pictures of doctors. Becker and Eden from a couple episodes ago with Nora, and she comes back to the Volkswagen bus, which I don't know, were you getting like a Scooby-Doo vibe off that?
Yes, very
like,
much
like
so.
they're trying to get pictures, you know, and Matt's in the van too, so they're on like a little mission where they're following these doctors and trying to find this machine that they made, and Nora really wants to go through with her mission and finish her thing and go through, as she kept saying. So then we bounce back again. It's a quick cut back and forth between the two timelines, and we see back with Kevin Sr. again, and her and Grace and Kevin Sr. They're kind of like telling the story about what happened and giving her almost like a lay of the land of the property. And you see Kevin Sr. showing off like the dead body of the police chief that they like buried under the boards in the church.
Yeah.
It was kind of a weird scene, whatever. So, and then they kind of start telling Lori what they want Kevin to do, why they want him to die again, right? I think this is when she said, oh, you know, everybody wants something from him or whatever. You know, everybody has their thing. And it was like a Wizard of Oz reference. And she says, you know, the heart, the brain, the courage, whatever. Kevin Sr. wants him to go back and meet the guy who died someday and then learn his song.
And then, yeah, Christopher Sunday.
Yeah, and then John wants him to talk to Evie and just let her know that she was loved.
Right.
Which I thought was weird, like John's finally accepting that she's gone. I thought she was still like kind of hanging on to that she was maybe alive.
Yeah. I don't, on a side note with John, I was thinking this episode that actor has done a solid job. Just in comparison to last season's character versus this season, kind of the switch in.
It's like a 180.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking of this one. I was thinking the actor's done a solid job of playing almost two totally different characters.
But yeah, so they kind of run down the different things that everyone wants out of Kevin. And,
right.
And she kind of believes in it and says, yeah, he'll come back. You know, he always does, whatever. And as they're talking, this cop shows up at the door, which then we cut back again.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cuts. You go back to the stakeout, the Scooby-Doo stakeout, if you will. They're just having some weird talk between Nora and Lori. It's very tense between them. I don't know if it's more tense between them or just Nora. You know, her whole demeanor has changed where she's just on a mission and just kind of like salty. And I don't know. They kind of say a couple cutting things at each other. And Nora gets into the discussion about suicide and says how she would do it if scuba diving, which I thought was like totally weird and off topic. It obviously comes back around later in the episode, but
mm-hmm.
Weird discussion.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, and then she tries to get her to do a reading of her. Tells Lori, "Oh yeah, you and John do that thing. Like, do it to me, whatever." And you got a little bit more background information on Matt and Lori. Matt and Nora. I feel like you never really get a lot of Matt and Nora together in the show.
Right, right.
So it's kind of cool to get a little bit of that. Like, you find out that their parents had died in a fire or whatever. Like, I don't know that we ever knew that before.
Not that I remember, no.
Yeah, it was a little interesting to finally hear some of that and just see them together. They don't really get a lot of the time together on the show. So. Yeah.
And I thought the Nora bringing up the suicide and how she died, like the way she said it, you know, she's eating, I don't know, potato chips or something. I forget what it was out of the bag. Not turning her head once to acknowledge the people behind her, you know, which is Lori and Matt. You know, her eyes are focused on her mission, which is these two doctors out the window of the van. But then she's just like, you know, it'll happen just like any other day. And your kids will wonder where you are. And people will say, oh, no, she just went off to go scuba diving. And it was a normal sunny Tuesday and you went scuba diving. But then in the end, nobody will know that you turned the valve the wrong direction. And everyone will think that it was just an accident. And she says it just like matter-of-factly, like she's reading someone's obituary out of the newspaper, you know?
Yeah, it was very, very matter-of-fact. Well, and I mean, both of these characters, unbeknownst to each other, have already had suicide attempts.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Which is weird. Like, everyone on the show has basically died or tried to die at some point.
Hey, I guess some folks feel being married to or dating Kevin is worth a suicide attempt.
That must be it, yeah. So then anyway, she's like, you know, Nora wants her to do the reading to find out what happened to her kids. And Lori's like, no, we don't do that. We don't do the departures. People got angry about it. John got attacked. And no one really wanted closure. They thought that they did, but they didn't. And Nora's like, well, I do. You know, so this is again where they were kind of having like a little bit of saltiness between the two of them. And Lori gives her lighter to borrow, the lighter that Jill gave her. And she like won't give it back for whatever reason. And she's like, give it back. And she's like, what? Like I did with Lily? Like, just, again, being super salty. I don't know. She had a totally different demeanor in this episode.
Yeah.
After her hotel breakdown scene, you know? So they tussle, and then you see how Nora got her black eye. So that kind of gives you the timeline of where we're at. That this sequence with Nora and Matt takes place before the Kevin Sr. stuff. So.
And it was accidental. Like, they, you know, they started to tussle because they kind of reached each other's rope, but then as soon as she hit her hard enough for the black eye, then Nora was like, oh, crap, I'm sorry, and started trying to help her.
Mm-hmm. So then after that little tussle, we cut back to the ranch, the Outback, and this was probably one of the funnier moments for me, I thought, but you were kind of supposed to be watching, you know, Lori and John and them discussing in the house, and in the background, Kevin Sr. is giving the police officer who showed up the tour. And then he just whacks him over the head with the shovel, kind of like in the background. You just see it.
Right.
Which I thought was pretty funny. And then he's like, I'm going to need a little help out here. Like,
again, very matter of fact, like everything with these people now is just accepted And, you know, everything they're dealing with Kevin Jr. is just accepted. Like, he's going to die and come back and it'll all be fine. And where they can just whack the police officer over the head. It's like, okay, that's no biggie. Let's just move, you know.
Yeah, it is funny how just, like, everybody believes into it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Did we get to the part where John and her, I'm missing this scene if it was earlier or later, so stop me, where he was talking about why they built the boat?
I think that's coming up.
Okay.
I think they,
all right, we'll come back.
Yeah, after Kevin Sr., you know, he has to go take the cop and dump him, you know, out in the outback. Officer Koalafart, which was another great line of the show. Gotta go dump Officer Koalafart.
Right.
The storm's coming. So this is the first time we reference the storm's coming, whatever. And then I think this is the scene where you cut to John and Lori are kind of sharing a little discussion over coffee. Is that what you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And this is, like you said, he says in this scene that he never believed she was gone. Yet he wants Kevin to tell her that she was loved. So it's like, okay, well, what do you believe here, buddy? And he kind of gives Lori the out where he's like, look, have I gone too far with this? Like, tell me if I'm crazy, we can go home right now. And Lori's like, no, I think you should see it through, you know.
Right.
I don't know. So then again, we cut back to the Scooby-Doo van. Oh, go ahead.
Well, just with the boat, because then he gave the story of as to why they were building the boat. It was
Yep.
It was more in a memorial for the husband who had died, right? For Grace's husband who had passed away. I'm forgetting why he passed away. But they decided to make a memorial of a boat to him in his honor. And that's when she said, well, just take down the church. I'm not using that anymore. Strip that thing down. Use that wood for there. And he said it very subtly, but if you think about it, two episodes ago when we first saw them building the boat, we all totally bought in that they were in on the flooding was happening, and that's why they were building the boat. And I think we even joked on our show as to they need a bigger boat. It had nothing to do with any of that. Grace wasn't building for the flood or not preparing. Her four horsemen women weren't preparing for the flood either. So that throws a little wrinkle into the believability of everybody here.
Yeah, true. I guess I didn't really consider that. I kind of was still believing it myself. So... But, okay, so we go back to the Scooby-Doo stakeout, and the doctors have left, and they're now in pursuit of the doctors and following them to see where they're going. And while they're leaving, Nora's telling the story, hey, did you hear about that French, you know, French submarine nuke thing? And the guy thought he was blowing up an egg coming out of a volcano in the middle of the ocean, like Godzilla style, some monster or whatever. And isn't that crazy, you know, a seven-headed monster or whatever. And apparently it comes from Revelations, and Matt's like, that's stupid. It's, you know, that's supposed to be a literal story. It's a metaphor.
It comes from Take Two Podcast if they listened to our show last week.
That's right. We broke that story here. Pretty proud of that decoding. but here I thought was interesting where, you know, Matt says that. He says it's supposed to be a metaphor. Seven-headed monster is not real. You know, seven-headed monster is not going to destroy the Earth. Well, in my mind, I'm already counting how many of these people are there. Lori, Nora, Matt, John, Kevin, Michael, and Kevin Sr. We've got seven people right there. So is the seven-headed monster these people?
Mm.
And they're the ones that are really going to destroy the world, maybe when they think that they're trying to save it.
Valid.
You know? Yeah. So thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So then we get the call. Lori gets the call while she's in the van from Michael. And he's like, look, we're at 5 Pigeon Run Road, you gotta come join us, Kevin's here, you know, he's trying to tell what's going on, and that's, again, just establishing timeline, I think, of, all right, this is what makes Lori leave Nora and go on to see Kevin Sr. and all that, so.
Mm-hmm. The two timelines are now matching up, getting closer together with the flashbacks to the current, yeah.
Yeah, and then she tells Nora that she needs to go, whatever, and she's like, well, that, you know, that's good. Tomorrow's a big day, and everyone should be with family. Which is kind of almost different than the way Nora's whole attitude has been the whole rest of the episode. So I thought that was like a strange line to her, from her, and I don't know if she was referencing having Matt with her or just thinking about maybe reuniting with her kids or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking Matt, but yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. So, and then we cut back again to the, we see Grace and Lori together, and they're, cooking dinner, I guess, and Grace was asking her about Kevin, like, well, why'd you guys divorce or whatever? And I thought this was pretty funny. Lori's just like, well, you know, I joined a cult, so that's kind of something you got to do. It's just like, just kind of got to leave your family when you join a cult. So that's good.
It's in the bylaws, like Article 2, leave family.
Yep. And then this is where we find out what Grace wants out of Kevin when he passes on. And, well, I want to find out what happened to my kid's shoes, which...
Very interesting.
That sounded weird to me, like... You're still hanging out of the shoes. Like, she was, you know, she kept saying that their shoes were missing when they found their bodies, and I want to know what happened to their shoes. And I don't know if you caught that, when Lori first arrived at the ranch, Kevin Sr. had, like, a bag of shoes with him.
Oh, I totally missed that. Really?
Yeah, so I guess she's still doing this. She mentions it in this discussion with Lori. She's going through, like, donation bags or whatever of shoes, like, getting shoes from thrift stores.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Looking through them to see if she can find her kid's shoes, which I was like, really? 7 years later, you're still doing this?
Yeah, that would be.
And where they live, it's like, it's not a very populated area of
right.
Australia. So how many shoes do you really need to look at over 7 years? I don't know. Weird. Yeah,
it's weird that the kid's shoes went completely missing, but then you're right, to still keep doing it this long.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever. We'll see if it bears any importance or not over the next two episodes, but... So, and then we see them having their last supper, as it were. Kevin Sr. says, you know, our last supper without our Jesus. And he says, we're also short on some of our apostles. And he kind of starts giving everybody their assignments. He says that he'll be Peter. He tells Michael, do you want to be Simon or Bartholomew when he passes? Which is kind of strange, because Michael's usually, like, game for all this, it seems like.
Yeah, he's very weird in this episode.
Yeah, very, very quiet, reserved, you know, trying to go to Lori on the side and dime out what's going on. So I don't really get what's going on with him. Maybe we'll see a little bit more in the next two episodes. And then he tells Lori, well, you're Thomas. He was the doubter, you know. And she's like, no, you know, I don't doubt. I'm more Judas. At least, right. he believed in it, but he acted on it, his beliefs, and betrayed them or whatever. And it's like, well, it kind of, you know, all of this stuff is really, like, proficient of what's going to be happening, and next thing you know, everybody starts kind of passing out.
Right.
And now
Michael kind of calls her out. He finally does talk.
Oh, that's right, because he mentions about Judas. Well, Judas killed himself.
Right. Say he took his money and then went and wound up killing himself, so he actually felt the guilt that Lori claims to not be feeling.
Sure, sure. Which may be foreshadowing, like I said, on Lori's part. Maybe she really is the Judas.
Yeah. So, and by this time, Grace had gotten up and excused herself from the table because she was sleepy. And just because it was late in the night, she was like, I'm tired, I'm out. So she went to go to bed.
And then Kevin Sr. face plants into his plate.
Yeah.
While Lori and Michael are talking.
Right.
And even while that's happening, she's just like, oh, no, he's sleeping, he's fine. And Michael kind of starts to be like woozy and whatever, and then... I think John's the last one to go fall out, and we realize that she had drugged them with Caleb's, the dog's, arthritis pills.
Yeah, at first I thought she killed
him. But similar to what Kevin Sr. did a couple episodes ago, where he passed out hard on the pills. So
yeah, I legit thought she killed him until she looked at the dog and whispered, I borrowed your pills. And I was like, oh, okay, she just put him to sleep.
At first, I thought when Kevin Sr. dropped, I was like, oh, man, did he, like, just die on us? Like, right. Have a heart attack or something?
Right.
But then once everybody else was kind of out, I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. Because they did show you, like, a shot of the pills while they were cooking.
Yeah.
I think just kind of as, you know, they always beat you over the head with these clues, I feel like. So then we switch back over to the stakeout timeline, and we're at the device now. There's this weird exchange between Lori and Nora over this beach ball story. I guess that was supposed to be, like, an emotional moment between Nora and Matt. I really didn't really sell it for me all the way, but... Talking about the beach ball at a baseball game and how people hit it around and then the security guy grabs it and deflates it, you know, and she was getting very upset about it because she's saying, Matt, that was the first time I saw you smile basically after our parents died and
right.
Because you got to hit that ball, but why did that guy do it? Why would he want that job to crush everyone's happiness or whatever? And Lori's like, well, he has to do that to prevent chaos. So I guess the point of that is just like, again, cluing you into what Lori's plans are here. Like, I'm the one who's trying to prevent chaos.
Right.
So.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I thought it was multiple avenues that just story went. A, it was, you know, gave us more about how they had, their parents died and what they had to go through. And then finally she saw that Matt had smiled and was coming out of it. And she herself might have been following suit because everyone was having fun with the beach ball. But then the usher takes the ball, deflates it, breaks everyone's heart. And then this, to me, it spoke towards why she's so kind of cold-hearted. You always figured it was because she lost her family with the departed, but also she was probably that way since then. Like, she was like, why are there people like that out there? Why do we have to have people just ruining everyone else's fun? And then, like you said, then Lori swoops in and says, because it would be chaos if it went on the field. And that's where her angle comes in. And then, once again, to me, they just accept it. Like, Nora's like, you're right. She's got tears down her face, but she looks at her, she's like, that makes sense.
And then her and Matt, let's hug it out.
Right. Exactly.
We were just punching each other in the van recently, but now we're hugging it out.
Right. So,
which is, I don't remember really getting a lot of Lori and Nora together, though, in the show. So it was good to see the two of them playing off each other.
Yeah, I mean,
and especially the actresses are fantastic. Carrie Coon and Amy Brenneman, awesome together. So
yeah, I guess, I mean, they were Kevin's exes, and, you know, never to a point would they have been in the same room until this season.
Yeah, but so earlier in the episode, we got the kind of bitterness and the weirdness between them, but then this one, they kind of got a little bit of emotion between each other, which was interesting. And again, I think they're at that point where they know Nora's now going to this device. They see it. This is the end of her game, you know, her end game here. So Lori's like, all right, I'm out. I'm going to leave you guys. Or Matt, you coming with me? And Matt's like, no, I'm going to stay with Nora. So I don't know if that means that Matt is also going to try and go through the device with her, or is just hanging out to be family for a little bit before she goes. I don't know. What was your opinion on that?
He dropped the same line from earlier, like it to be with family.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I that made me think of the last episode. Maybe he found his peace and he's done with his whole shtick that he's been pushing since day one of, you know, the rapture and everything coming. Maybe he did find the peace and is like, all right, I'm just chill now too.
Yeah, because we saw him in the van stuffing the napkins in his nose and stuff. I mean, he's still feeling sick, the cancer effects. The, you know, David Burton getting attacked by the lion didn't save him.
And ta-da, didn't cure him.
None of that worked, so he's still on the way out. So it's funny to me, though, how they kind of have this dual, you know, meanings or dual, I don't know, standards on the show where it's like they push these little, like, family alliances and things like that, and like, it's very feel-good-ish, like, oh, you know, we want to be with family and we, you know, whatever. But then they're also, like, people just killing each other or killing themselves off. Like, you know, how can you be so concerned with being with family but want to kill yourself in the same, like, you know what I mean? That just seems like a weird double standard to me.
Which comes back around at the end of this episode, I think.
It does. Yeah. So, and then after she leaves Matt and Nora, we go back to where Kevin Sr. is again. And I guess Nora first passes off the book to her, right? I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
She passes the book off to Lori. It says, give this to Kevin Sr. Kevin, or Matt gives
Matt,
it to her.
Yeah,
Matt gives her. My bad. So Matt gives her the book, and he says, you know, tell him I didn't put him in. I'm sorry I didn't put him in the fucking book.
And he didn't put himself in or whatever?
Yeah, and tell Kevin that I'm sorry I did put him in there.
Right, like, right.
Yeah, so tell Kevin Sr. I'm sorry I didn't put him in there. Tell Kevin that I'm sorry I did. So kind of like, you know, I might have built you up too much and maybe almost made this a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, by writing this book, you know, did I create all this, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then what Nora even says here, like, you're not going to tell anybody about this, you know, right? And she's like, give me your cigarettes. This is, you know, you're my patient.
Wait. She asked for a dollar.
Oh, that's right. And she says she doesn't have a dollar.
She only has hundreds.
Cigarettes, right?
Yeah, she said, I only have hundreds.
Yeah.
I hate when that happens. That's the worst.
That is the worst. Yeah. Why would she get rid of your hundreds? You're about to be incinerated, possibly.
Right. Why would she care? Yeah. Just give her the one. Just give her one of them. Here's $100. Yeah.
So she gives her the cigarettes, and she's like, all right, now you're my patient. So basically just, you know, patient, confidentiality, whatever.
And then Nora says, so same time next week, you know, with a crackle in her voice, like knowing this is not going to happen. But she said, you know, same time next week. And even Amy Brenneman, or, geez, Lori, then, you know, kind of crackles in her voice too. Like, yep, you know what, you know, booked or whatever she says, but agrees to it. But they both are saying it in a, whatever the big word here is to use, term of, this isn't going to happen because we'll be dead, but
what happened. Yeah, they kind of have they're finally emotionally connected, I guess, or whatever, yeah. Which is ironic in a way that they were, like you said, ex-lovers of the same guy and had like a built-in hatred almost for each other, but now they're finally connecting, and then that it's over. So
yeah,
yeah. So this is where we go back to the ranch, and we see Lori chilling outside as Kevin comes back on his horse ride.
Which is, again, just accepted. He rides horses now.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everyone does, apparently, I guess, in Australia, maybe? I don't know. If I go to Australia, I guess I gotta ride a horse. I've never ridden one, actually. Is that weird? I've never been on a horse.
It's not weird, because until just less than 1 year ago, I rode a horse for the first time myself.
I told the wife the other day, I was like, next time we go on a vacation, I think I want to ride a horse because I've never done it. And I feel silly being an old, like older male now and never ridden a horse. I feel like I need to be manly and ride a horse.
And what if something to this effect happens? You need to be well-versed and
see,
what to do.
There you go. It's apocalypse training
right yeah, there. Exactly. I want you to tell that to your horse instructor when they saddle you up. So
and
why?
Then
you...
and then after that, I got to start building a boat.
Right.
Kevin asks her, did you help Nora find what she was looking for? And yeah, she did. You know, I was here. I came back to say goodbye. I drugged everyone's food. They're sleeping. Like it's a normal thing. but she's like, well, I just wanted to talk. The two of us, and I didn't think anybody would let us, so I drugged their food.
Yeah, and at first Kevin's like, what? And then when she says it, it's like, oh, all right.
Makes sense. So from there, they kind of get into little discussions about, like, things about their relationship that they may have done in secret or whatever, and she's like, oh, yeah, I went to Phoenix, and I went on a conference, but I went to a spa instead. After it was so boring, I went and spent a $2,000 a night spa, and he's like, oh, whatever, and he's like, I killed that hamster.
Right, he's like, I'll see your spa and raise you the kid's hamster. I killed it and buried it 10 minutes before you got home.
Mr. Fuzzy, within she's like, no, it was Mr. Funny. He's like, yeah, you're right, fucking Mr. Funny. Like, they didn't even know the name of it, whatever. It's funny. So then, like, a little bit of levity between the two of them.
Yeah, it was a great scene until then she decided to just drop the trump card on him.
Well, no, even before that, he was like, oh, I hated our house, which was step.
Yeah, you're right. You know? You're right. He upped
like,
it
well, to you. You know, you were happy and whatever, and yeah, but I hated our house. And then she's like, I was pregnant. Okay.
He's like, wait, when? And then it, you know, she lets into what we already knew, that she was pregnant when everyone disappeared and she was sitting there watching the sonogram, which is pretty wild. Pretty ingenious for them to think of like a scenario like that.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And really, if you think about it, the Garvey household was untouched from the departure otherwise. You know, the four of them stayed intact.
Sure.
So it was strange. And I guess Kevin, you know, it was also strange for Kevin not to know for 7 years that happened. So. Yeah. He's like, well, why didn't you tell me? And she says, like, you know, we raised two beautiful kids. That was the best thing we ever did. I didn't want to ruin that. And, like, you know, did you want more? Or no, I didn't want more. And she's like, well, I didn't want to tell you. And then I didn't have to tell you because it was gone. So.
And so was she. She was part of the GR, so.
Well, yeah, and that's the weird thing. So none of them were departed except for the baby, the fetus, whatever, but... Then she leaves and goes to the Remnant, and then the son goes and joins up with Holy Wayne.
Yeah.
So half the family was gone in that sense.
Yeah. Right.
She's like, are you scared? And he's like, no, when I did it last time, it was the most real thing, and I felt so alive. It was, you know, and he's like, well, you know, I could come back again. And she's like, I hope you do. But I think as they're discussing it, they both kind of know this is it. Like, this isn't going to work, you know? Yeah. Why are we agreeing to this, really?
Right.
You kind of get that vibe from them. And then he says, are you going to stay, you know, and see if I come back, basically. And she's like, I can't. And he had borrowed her lighter again to light a cigarette, whatever. And he's like, here, do you want the lighter back? And she's like, no, I quit. Which I thought was also another one of those dual meaning phrases mm-hmm. they love to throw in the show.
Right.
Because that was kind of the last thing she said to him, right?
Correct.
Or no, one more thing, because then doesn't he say, is Nora gone? And she says, we're all gone. So, like, two kind of ominous things out of her mouth there as, like, the last things she's saying to Kevin.
Yeah.
You know, as they say goodbye to each other.
Yeah.
And I thought that was it. I thought that was the end of the episode there. I thought we were going to fade out. But nope. We cut away to a scuba boat, and Lori's on there getting ready to go on a little scuba adventure. With the Australian captain taking her out in the harbor.
Yeah.
And she gets a phone call, and it's kind of appropriate that she gets a phone call from her kids and really benign, you know, daily conversation. What was that show we used to watch when we were kids? The two kids were fighting over it. They couldn't remember the name of it. But to her, that's like, you can tell she was ready to end it all for herself. And this is great to hear from her kids. And it's a great, you know, opportunity for her to say goodbye to her kids. And,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Were you thinking they were going to change her mind?
I did. I did think so. Because yeah. she seemed to really light up when she got the call. And but the only thing that made me wonder about that is she kind of lied to them and said, no, you know, I'm just by myself and it's nice. And didn't tell them where she really was and all that.
Yeah. Because they asked. Yeah, they were like, isn't Dad in Australia? And she was like, oh, really? Neat.
Yeah, totally played off and didn't know what, like, she didn't know what was going on. But it was definitely a good ending for her to get that closure with her kids, if you will, before she does decide to drop herself in the water and screw up the scuba as Nora told her to do. So she says goodbye to the kids and that she loves them. And the scuba captain says, hey, you got the storm coming in. It's now or never.
Which is very interesting to me, just on a side, that the boat guy would see this gigantic storm approaching and even take a customer out to go scuba diving.
Yeah, on the anniversary also.
Right, and on that day, of all days. You know, I would think that would be like against company policy. Maybe she paid him a couple extra bucks on the side or something, but that part I didn't like the continuity of that with the episode. Just, you know, maybe he could have aforementioned, like, I do hear a storm is coming, but not the fact that you can see the black clouds approaching rapidly.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so.
So, yeah, but so she drops off the boat, and they kind of show you the water and the boat bouncing up and down for about 15 seconds before they cut out. And you're, I don't know, I was kind of waiting to see her pop up again, kind of like earlier when she decided against the pills, you know. But that didn't happen. We got the credits, so.
I felt like she twisted the mouthpiece, the air.
Oh, yeah, before she went under, yeah.
Yeah, okay, which is, you know, how Nora described how you could do it without anybody knowing.
Yeah, I'm not certified, so I don't know.
But you're right. It I was waiting for her to pop up, waiting for her to grab her phone and call back Lily and the kids, but...
Which we may still get, who knows?
Sure.
But the way they left it, to me, it seems like we've lost the two female leads of the show in this episode, that they've both met their end, or at least decided to in some way, and whether they come back or not, we'll see. We've got two more episodes to find out, but... Pretty deep stuff, I mean, really, and not, like, I don't know, not a very uplifting episode by any means.
No.
Had those few fleeting moments of humor in it, but it's really heavy stuff and very emotionally, you know, entrenched here, and we're really getting to the end, two more episodes to go, so we'll see what happens.
Definitely the most religious episode where they really get into some religious aspects and start naming people out of the Bible and correlating them with what is happening, and you see that they are actually associating themselves with religious people and events. And, you know, now going forward, they don't have their doubter. They don't have Thomas, as you will, to even object to anything that's going on. You know, the one thing that kind of kept folks sane was Lori, if you will. And now she's essentially, as we've left it, like we just said, now she's out. So who in the next two episodes is going to stop them from doing anything crazy? You know?
Because now it's almost just all on Kevin Sr. Like, he's the crazy one that's driving it all.
Right.
Because you had Matt before driving everybody with the book of Kevin, but he's gone. And he's on his own, like, piece, whether he went with Nora or not. He's not really involved anymore, though. So it's really just Kevin Sr. and Kevin Jr. and what they decide to do, I guess, and how John and Michael play into that, we'll see. But, yeah, it's interesting. We're definitely wrapping it up, though, with only two episodes to go, so...
Pretty crazy. I think the first four episodes were just throwing haymakers at us and a progressive storyline going forward, pushing towards this final day. And then it seems like the last two episodes were all about everyone just making their peace with themselves, I guess, would be, you know, first.
And there was a lot more religious stuff, like you said.
Yeah.
I do like the way this season has focused on single characters a lot, though, and really gotten into their backgrounds and their motivations and whatnot. I think that's an interesting approach, more so than we got in the first two seasons.
Well, they're doing it in a better fashion than other shows, i.e., you know, Walking Dead will focus on one random character and not advance the plot line.
Sure.
You know, not to bash a totally different show, But, you know, this is, it all ties together and it all means something. And hopefully we find out within the next two episodes what it all ties together to exactly mean.
Mm-hmm. So, off topic a little bit, but bringing it back around to what you were talking about earlier, I did look it up. Lisa Richardson is the music supervisor for The Leftovers.
Look at that, folks. I promise you by next week, but we got it within the first 40 minutes.
It says she's been working for over 20 years in that job, and she's worked on shows like Narcos, Parenthood, Friday Night Lights, and she works alongside director Peter Berg. He did Friday Night Lights, and he's also a producer on The Leftovers, so that's kind of her connection to it.
Nice.
And there's an interview I pulled up here on avclub.com from last year, and she talks about just the way that they collaborate on the show and come up with the idea. She said a lot of it does come from Damon Lindelof, and it's mostly his ideas more than anybody.
Gotcha.
But yeah, because I mean, even when they weren't doing the intro songs, even since the first season, they've had songs that were very good in the episodes and were very meaningful, you know.
Oh yeah.
I think it was the season one finale they used Metallica in that. I'm sure it's a lot of Lindelof's, you know, influence, but that is a very cool job to have, and I'd want to pick her brain and find out, you know, some how do you even get into that, like.
Yeah, that's something where it's like, hey, I know a lot of music, and then you talk to that person, you're like, no, I don't know a lot of music at all. Yeah. You know,
because I remember, and she talks about it in this interview, the one song by the Pixies, "Where Is My Mind," which they've used in a few different movies and shows and stuff, but it was used pretty well in the show with Kevin and Patty early on in the show. I don't know if you remember that song or not. It was also in like Fight Club, like in the credits of Fight Club, I think, you know.
Yeah.
It's been used time and time again, but it's a pretty epic song, and I don't know. But this season, they've really upped their game, I think.
Big time.
So big props to Lisa Richardson. And I doubt you're listening, but if you do, come on and give us a chat.
Yeah, we'll Twitter her. We'll send her a thing.
Yeah.
If she has the old Twitter, who doesn't these days?
And we sure do, at Take Two Podcast. So check us out. Send us your questions, your thoughts. If there's anything you want us to talk about The Leftovers, or you just want to tell us how great of a job we're doing, please do. And also give us a review and a follow. iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, any of that stuff. That's where you can find us. And keep listening. We got two more episodes of this. And if you're interested in other stuff, not just Leftovers, we cover it all. We're always covering different stuff. We've got all sorts of special episodes. We do our weekly episode where we break down all the box office news. You can find our website, take2podcast.com, where we have all sorts of reviews all the time up there. So please check us out.
Have a good night, folks.
See you.